This is where Mayor Vass lives. You notice something? Or here, where Nithya Raman's $3 million mansion sits. They don't have to live in the mess they've created where you live. This is where I live. They let my home burn down. I know what the consequences of failed leadership are. That's why I'm running for mayor. For my sons and the rest of us Angelenos that want to stop these corrupt politicians from destroying our city. We are going to get the golden age of Los Angeles back.
That's the voice of Spencer Pratt, who's running for mayor in Los Angeles against Karen Bass, who was out of the country when this happened, who was responsible for the fact that they couldn't get any water. That she had fired lots of the firemen in Los Angeles. It was just horrible. So Spencer is, as my understanding, he's not producing these AI ads. Other people who support him are doing that. But they are absolutely phenomenal. And he did lose his house in the Pacific Palisades. And so he stands with his house burned down, and he's living in a trailer. The ads are powerful. They are just absolutely wonderful. And it's like a new age in political advertising. And so today we're going to be talking about that with a political consultant that I met recently at a conference. I really like him. He's kind of an honest guy. What a change. And he does polling, and so he has a lot of things to tell us. His name is Rick Shafton. And so you're going to enjoy this conversation. I hope you don't go away. But first, this is June now, and you know, one of the things that happens in June is Father's Day. So when an unexpected pregnancy happens, the focus is almost always on the mom. And dads, well, too often they're overlooked and pushed to the side, left feeling like their voice doesn't matter. But maybe that's how you feel too. You want to be supportive, you want to do the right thing, but fear sets in and questions start racing. Can I really do this? Can I be a good father? Well, that's exactly how John felt. Me, a dad? That didn't even feel possible, he said. I didn't know the first thing about being a good father, but then we found preborn. We talked to people who cared, and we got a free ultrasound. That's when it came together for me, that we could do this, and that I could do this. Today, you can help another father experience that same moment of hope. For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound through preborn and help expectant parents see a future filled with life, compassion, and the hope of God's love. To donate, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. All right, well, sit back, and you might want a pencil and paper today because our guest, Rick, tells us so many things about what's going on in elections around the country, and it might be in your state. So stay tuned to this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Groomers, they're the ones in schools telling your boy he's really a girl. And Abigail Spanberger sponsored a law keeping parents in the dark about it. Worse, Spanberger's spokesman said parents who object to puberty blockers, pronouns, and even sex change operations on minor children should be looked into. And a top ally is proposing charging them with felony child abuse, even prison. That's nuts. But that's Abigail Spanberger. Radical, woke, progressive, crazy. Courageous Conservative PAC is responsible for the contents of this ad.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. And why am I playing that ad? Well, Abigail Spanberger went on to become the governor of Virginia, and I think it's pretty clear now who she really is. But if people had listened to that ad, which ran when she was running for Congress, I guess when she defeated Dave Brat in the Congressional District 7th, I think it is, in Virginia, they would have understood who they were electing as governor. Well, today we're going to talk to Rick Shafton because he's the one that created that ad, and he was spot on. Rick is the president of Neighborhood Research and Media. And I'm going to just read what his bio says because it's fun. It's well written. I wonder who wrote this, Rick. He's a battle-tested political strategist, pollster, and media consultant focused on helping underdog, underfunded conservatives win tough races. He volunteered for Richard Nixon when he was 10. He later went on to intern with New York Senator Jim Buckley and worked as a congressional aide before founding his firm in 1988. He built a national reputation for unconventional tactics, rotating out ads every 2 or 3 days and using live operator voter interviews to uncover messages that move voters, drive turnout, and win elections. He has never lost a defamation suit in spite of the fact that he has hit candidates pretty hard with his ads and or had an ad pulled for factual inaccuracies, and that says a lot about him. So with that, we'll welcome Rick Shafton. Welcome, Rick.
Thanks, Sandy. It's an honor to be on with you.
Well, let me just say that you and I met recently at a conference in D.C. We had a great conversation, and it's funny, Rick. I guess I've never even told people at this mic, or maybe any in my entire career at radio, I started thinking about how did I get in politics? Well, I was the Nixon-Kennedy race. I was just a kid. My parents, of course, were very political, and they didn't run, but they paid attention. So at our kitchen table, we had a lot of discussions. And then when I got older, I ran for student council. I ran student elections. I ran for a lot of things, and I just had a fascination with politics. So I ended up, of course, doing a lot of things in Chicago and other places. But that's how it started for me. And, of course, I do radio, but politics is a big part of what I talk about. So I think it's interesting that we both started with Nixon. But tell us, give people an idea of what candidates you have worked for in your career as a political consultant and pollster.
Well, actually, I worked back in the pre-Obama days, actually was working for a number of what I would call conservative Democrats, and many of them existed then.
And that's right.
Because the differences, I mean, if you go back 100 years, the differences in the parties had nothing to do with issues. It was, if you're Catholic, you're a Democrat. If you're Protestant, you're a Republican. If you're a Northerner, you're a Republican. If you're a Southerner, you're a Democrat. I mean, it's just, you look at the 1904 presidential map, by county, you look at it by county, and you see who supported the North in the Civil War and who supported the South. I mean, you see northwestern New Jersey, northeast Pennsylvania, there's a little Democratic area because those areas supported the South in the war. The whole East Tennessee, you know, North Georgia, that was all red. That supported the North, right? That was how elections were. Issues were less important. What really changed a lot of that was the Goldwater election, where the Republican Party was clearly ideologically different, although the general was muted, but it was the conservative Republican Party became the conservative party, which was not the case. And it wasn't even the case when I started out. It's really, and I was a Trump person, but Trump has really crystallized that we are the conservative party and they are not. And what's happened to the Democrats is they've just gone so crazy left now. The Democrats that I've worked for they don't recognize these people at all, and they've all been forced out of the party. But what I did learn from Democrats, and what the real difference in the two parties is, not in terms of issues, but in terms of style, Democrats taught me to win, that the only thing important in politics is winning. And Republicans told me it's better to lose than make enemies. I'm not making this up, and I've heard this throughout my entire life. You make too many enemies. You know, this guy's very powerful. You might need him someday. Maybe he can do you a favor. I mean, one time I had a race, this is 35 years ago, and my candidate had $1,500 in the bank. And we were running against the state Senate majority leader in New Jersey, who had just voted for Jim Florio's tax hike. And I was offered a $5,000 a month contract to basically just disappear, like just drop your friend and. And I'm like, hey, it's my friend. I can't do it, which I was, you know, I certainly $5,000 a month would have more than doubled my income at the time. And the end of the story is we ended up winning, which is the best part. We beat the Senate majority leader.
Wow.
And we're outspent. I mean, but we just focused on just, you know, keeping our, you know, the firearms trained in his eyeball. And it's keeping your eye on the prize. And now today, with social media, and AI, these are the great equalizers. I mean, this allows our side to be underfunded and be able to play on the same level they're on.
Absolutely. In fact, let me stop for a second, because I have pulled a couple of clips that I thought might fit into our discussion. You talk about AI, and so we think of Spencer Pratt, who's running for mayor in Los Angeles. So let's listen. This is clip four, just a little taste of his handiwork. Clip four.
Now this is a story all about how my
Spencer Pratt out with a new ad Monday, reminding voters why he's running for mayor of Los Angeles, all while addressing reports about whether he actually lives in the Airstream trailer prominently featured in his campaign.
It literally gave him an opportunity to reinforce to voters why he's running for mayor, because his home burned down in the Palisades fire and the response that the city of LA provided was not working.
Got it, one little fire. My mom got scared and said, you're moving in with Harvey Levin in Bel Air.
The 42-year-old generating clicks and conversations online with his blunt videos highlighting issues of crime and homelessness.
If you like the last 4 years, you're going to love the next four.
But it's these artificial intelligence ads that Pratt has been resharing and generating a lot of buzz. Fox 11 reached down to Nithya Raman's campaign and to Mayor Karen Bass's campaign for a comment on the AI-generated videos. Bass's campaign responded saying, quote, Spencer is doing the best Trump impression, but it's not going to work in L.A.
Well, we'll see about that. That's not a great example, but Spencer, for instance, when supposed Karen Bass was talking in that ad, behind her was the horrible Palisades fire. She's walking through down the street as the fire is just consuming all these houses while she's promising this great future for L.A. That's how powerful those ads are. So, Rick, sorry to take such a long time, but what do you think about the use of AI? I mean, for these ads?
It's, whether people like it or not, it's coming, and they have to. It's something that's going to be used in campaigns. We used it last year. I thought it was a great ad. We had Tim Walz, you know, bowing to the Chinese. And I used AI. I just had him bowing, called him the Manchurian candidate. I mean, they just feed you so much material. So ridicule. I mean, few people on the right have read Alinsky. I read it in high school. I realized half what he was talking about. That's us. We're the right. We're the people nobody respects. It's on our side. So I just kind of used a lot of those tactics, and ridicule is a great part of it, which is what he's using. But what AI is going to do is to enhance the use of ridicule in campaigns, but it's also going to make it affordable for any small-level campaign to put out professional content, whether it's just, you know, these funny type of ads or just taking footage that you shot on your phone and manipulating it and putting words on the screen. I mean, what I do, I think there's just lots of people who are listening right now who could do exactly what I do. They know enough about their local politics or their local elections, and they've probably seen some jerk like me walk in the room and tell them what they don't know, or that they think the consultant thinks they don't know. And actually, these people know quite a bit. And this is why I do polling, because it just connects me to reality and not the consultant talk and the in-speak that we get reading social media or reading our own things. It connects us to the real world. Right. And I'm amazed at what I see. We ask, you like this person? What do you like most about them? And a perfect example, Tom Massie. If you followed this from the outside, you'd think the whole issue with Tom Massie is like Israel, the war, and Epstein. Well, when you ask people in the district, what do you like about Massie, if they liked him, or what don't you like about him, or Ed Gowrain, or whatever, like almost nobody mentioned Epstein, almost nobody mentioned Israel, nobody mentioned the war. A few people did. The people, you know, two people out of 291 said Epstein. Five or six out of that number mentioned Israel, the war, and whether it was the number one problem or anything like that, right? And those people pretty much just split. I mean, there were a lot of other issues that people focused on, the people who liked Massie because they felt he was a constitutionalist or he read all the bills and they liked that, or people who felt that he was, you know, that he was disloyal to Trump or just voting the wrong way on issues. And what I saw from this, people actually are much smarter than political types think they are. They knew all the issues. They read through the fluff and they discerned truth from fiction.
Yeah,
and
I totally agree with you. Just think of a good example that people understand right now is like the Save America Act. John Thune and the rest of that crowd, Cornyn, the rest of them, think that we're so stupid that they can say, oh, no, we're for the Save America ad, and realize that they're doing nothing about it, in fact, obstructing. People understand that now, and yet they don't seem to get that. And I think that's why Cornyn went down, but that's a different issue. But I totally agree with you that consultants, and it's been happening for several decades because I watched it in Chicago, things that just drove me crazy. I was going to save our political consultant conversation to a little bit further, but let's just talk about it. Political consultants are, well, all right, Rick, you're one. So tell us what's wrong with them now.
Well, because political, it's become a business. It's about making money. It's not about winning elections. And it's about, I've just seen too many cases where it's just a total, complete grift. And you just mentioned Cornyn. John Cornyn's campaign was the biggest grift of American history. Because anyone who had polled that race, so there's ultimately was no chance John Cornyn was going to win that race. I don't care what he did. He was just, there's a point where people just wear out their welcome. And sometimes it's personal, sometimes it's not. I've been on the other side of this, and I've had to tell people, don't run. Don't do it. Go out a winner. You know, take the presidency, University of Texas or something. Get something. Save face. Go out. Don't go out being defeated 64-36, and that's what happened to him. And he should have seen this coming, and if his consultants were honest with him, they would have let him know. Maybe he was like, I don't care. I'm going to go all the way anyway, but that was just stupid. But
they spent
Louisiana, Sandy Cassidy. Yes. I mean, anyone who pulled that race, there's no way Cassidy was ever going to win that.
But the thing that drives me crazy, Rick, is that I think the Republicans, the Republican Senate, I guess it's the whatever the moniker is for their fundraising arm, spent $78 million. I think it was $78 million in Cornyn's race. And as I understand it, they've spent very little on the other races where conservatives are running in Senate races. And that's the disgusting thing about it. And that illustrates your point.
It's a double-edged sword, though, because their ads are so bad. I have to say something. If I was running a U.S. Senate race, and this is a very unpopular opinion, I would not want them to make any ads because I think their ads are horrible. Spending money on bad ads does not help a candidate.
Well,
ads are typical consultant garbage.
Yes.
Or shows that, you know, they show a candidate walking on the beach or some stupid nonsense like that. It's not believable. Everything is about issues, and there's two sides. And this is about, it used to be in the 80s, the 90s, it was all personality politics, and you could be a Republican and run in Rhode Island and win, or you could be a Democrat and run in Southwest Missouri and get elected, right? Because it was about personality, and he's a family man, has six kids, and that was what people were voting on. They weren't voting on issues. Today, it's all issues, and it's just about who turns out who. And we're worried about winning votes from people who aren't going to vote for us, as opposed to getting the votes from people who do vote for us.
I totally.
Right. And Sandy, you know, in the state of Illinois, if I was running for senator in Illinois or governor in Illinois, and every single person who voted for Donald Trump in Illinois came out and voted in 2026, I would win because turnout's down. It's just, right? Illinois, just to take that state, because it's a question of who votes. And we need to get a higher percentage of the Trump vote out than they get of the Kamala Harris vote.
You know, you're talking about Illinois. I just was... There was a girl, Jeannie Ives, who I know her well, actually. She was in a...
I think it was the money when she ran.
Well, anyway, she was part of an organization that I was leading at the time. She's a West Point grad. She's sharp. And, you know, she almost beat... She almost won that race. And she tackled every issue. And it was bam, bam, bam. And she was great. She was great at it, Rick. She didn't have any money behind her. And she certainly didn't have... someone like you who was out on the edge. She did kind of ran her own thing, but she almost won. I think I was trying to illustrate your point, even though she lost, that she was really hard on all the issues in Illinois. She was not afraid, man. She took it all on. I loved it.
Well, there's also the perception, I think, in her race, and with a lot of conservatives, there's this perception that the strong conservative is somehow a weaker candidate than the rhino moderate who's bad on all the issues. And they actually say this with a straight face. They say, pro-life voters will vote for a pro-abortion Republican because we just want to win.
Exactly. They do say that.
And they don't understand pro-life voters. Mm-mm. Because who's your consultant class? It's a bunch of men in their 20s and 30s who will tell you, oh, yes, I'm pro-life, but they're lying. They're really not, because when they hang out with me and they think that I'm just kind of like, you know, more libertarian thinking or whatever, I hear what they really think. I mean,
this is the biggest problem.
No, these consultants that tell pro-life candidates, you can't tell anybody you're pro-life, can't say anything about the trans people.
I know. Well, I think there was just a meeting with the president's chief of staff, Susie Wiles. And my understanding, Rick, is that in that meeting of consultants, now I might be wrong about this, but this is what I've heard, and the people I've heard it from are credible, that inside that meeting, they're telling candidates now not to talk about the border, not to talk about trans issues. They always say, and they've been saying this for decades, I don't need to tell you, but I'm telling my audience, run on lower taxes, run on the economy, but don't talk about those social issues. Don't even touch those. So he's family man. Maybe they now say it was a pro-life, but of course it's meaningless, as you just pointed out. And then talk about how he's going to lower your taxes or whatever. They've been saying that for so many years. It's disgusting to me. And do you know if that's true in the Susie Wiles meeting?
You know, I had actually heard the opposite. I actually heard that they were telling people to focus on the weak and woke.
Okay.
So I was kind of, I mean, that's what I'd heard, but I was, you know, I don't get invited to these things. But,
I don't either.
But, you know,
I hope you're right. I want you to be
last time.
I want you to be right.
And they, them, and they, them, and it's just the ultimate ridicule. And I see this is what's happening right now. Everybody's panicking about the fall because, first off, you know, we had the high gas prices and we have mediocre polling. But I don't think it's the polling's as bad as everybody seems to see it as. But what you've also got is the Democratic Party's going so far to the left now, and as I referred to before, but it's even like the crazy left of before, like Abigail Spanberger is not far enough left for these people. This is where they are.
Mm-mm.
They're at the level of Mandami, who goes to the Pakistani parade, but not the Israeli parade.
Right.
So that's where they are.
I know. Well, as an illustration of that, here's a montage of James Tallarico, who is going to be running against Ken Paxton for Senate in Texas. So I just want to give a little touch of the crazy. This
is Ken Paxton, who's never lost an election, but he's a horrible candidate.
I know. All right. Here's his opponent, James Tallarico, clip 6.
Did they teach you in Sunday school that Jesus Christ himself was a radical feminist?
The American flag is such a complicated symbol for most of us.
God is non-binary.
You can't call yourself a Christian and reject the stranger seeking asylum at our southern border.
Our trans community needs abortion care too.
Huh? Modern science obviously recognizes that there are many more than two biological sexes. In fact, there are 6.
Prophetic voices like Jesus have helped me reckon with my own whiteness.
Our southern border should be like our front porch. There should be a giant welcome mat out front.
We are trying to fundamentally change the politics in this state and in this country.
Yeah. No need to sit and cry over, you know, your whiteness or your masculinity.
Okay. All right. So he's running in Texas. So just before I get your response, because I want it, USA Today came out with a poll. I don't know if you saw this, Rick. I saw it yesterday because I was prepping for something else. But they are claiming that in Texas, Trump has a 48% approval rating. But Tallarico has a 47% approval rating in Texas. Rick, I don't believe that. I don't believe that for a minute. How could that be?
I'll tell you how it could be. Because, first off, the Republicans just had this bloodbath primary where they were, pounding Paxton into the ground, and every unsavory thing you could possibly say about Ken Paxton just had $100 million put behind it. As opposed to Tallarico, who won the first primary with no runoff. So he's had a free ride for 6 weeks. And, you know, there's the social media attacking, but most people haven't seen this stuff yet. And that's okay, because the election is November. They don't need to see it in June. They need to see it in September. I mean, I'm sure it'll be playing all summer. But the thing that worries me, because I've been on the other side of this, candidates have too much money. They're going to start blowing this stuff out in June, and it's just going to continue into July and August, and then by September it's going to be old news. But same with the attacks on Paxton, by the way. Like, everybody's going to hear this stuff about all this unsavory X, Y, and Z, but by October, September, it's going to be old news. So they're going to have to come back to the basics, which is that I'm a conservative. I represent Texas values, and he represents crazy communist Bernie Sanders values. And really, I mean, he's given the beauty of Tallarico is you can say this guy has any position. You can just make stuff up and say it, and it's true.
I mean, like, couldn't get any worse, right? Couldn't get further. It couldn't get any crazier, especially when there are so many
reparations for slavery. Like, as you know, by the way, as was Mikey Sherrill. Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey, the governor of New Jersey, Republican opponent, would not attack her for sponsoring. Not saying she actually sponsored the bill, co-sponsored the bill to have slavery reparations. Wouldn't use it.
He wouldn't use it. See, that's the thing. See, here's the thing, Rick. I'm with you. I can see from, because I've listened to a lot of your ads. I've always believed in telling the truth, and if it's offensive, yes, exactly. Which is what you did. This is what you do. I saw that, and I love that. But
right? I could make stuff up would be true, but we don't need to.
No, but we don't need to. That's right. But the Republicans always say, "Oh no, that's not nice," or whatever they say. And so remember,
did they ever say they're for sex change operations on 10-year-olds? I never saw them say that.
Right. Yeah, I remember. Well, here's another one. I remember. This is random.
That last cycle, by the way, we beat that one.
Well, I remember John McCain, doing this odd bow sort of to Barack Obama. Wouldn't use his last name or first name. Oh, Hussein.
His middle name.
He refused to use his middle name. And just silly things like that, right? Like some sort of honor. I don't know what kind of honor that, because that was Hussein belonged in his name. It was his name. And it did tell us a lot about what was actually true in his life. So, but he was a coward.
Well, and then this gets back to the SAVE Act thing. You see, this is the whole problem in the Senate. And the only people who understand this really are people who are senators. And they say it's a club. It really is a club.
Yes, it
is. And they're all like personal friends. Like, they may act like they're not friends, but they're all friends. They all are. I mean, maybe a few of them don't talk to other people here and there, but mostly they get along. I understand none of them like Ted Cruz back in the day. But other than that, you know, it's a club. So what happens is that these, like this, you get to the SAVE Act. Well, it's not that they don't want to vote for the SAVE Act. They just don't want to vote to get rid of the filibuster to pass the SAVE Act, because that would break the camaraderie in the Senate. It's all around having 60 votes to block anything. I mean, they don't even like this reconciliation stuff they're getting forced to do.
Oh, I know.
Right?
You know, I want to ask you something. I don't have an organization anymore. I do media, and it's just me. But when I was president of Concerned Women for America, we targeted John Thune on something I don't remember. It's been too long. I don't even remember the issue, but it had to do with abortion, because he ran on being pro-life, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then he was doing something untoward. And so we ran ads in South Dakota, because we had a local CWA chapter in South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
And those
mm-hmm.
ads were so effective, I can't even tell you. It's a market that doesn't cost much. There's not that many media outlets. And we did a hard-hitting ad, because I had something to do with that. And it worked. And he suddenly, you know, decided he was for whatever he was not for before. And so I've thought, and I've tried to get several organizations that I know of to run ads in South Dakota during that, when the conversation about the Save America Act was at its peak. I said, let's run ads in South Dakota. Let's hit him hard about what he's doing. And no one would do it. No one would do that, Rick.
Yeah, because they don't want to. They don't want to go out there and say we're at war with the Senate Majority Leader.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Thune is probably, I mean, everybody's always primary Thune. Well, I don't know. I mean, he may be popular in South Dakota. Remember, they had George McGovern there who got, you know, managed to get reelected after getting wiped out of the presidential race. And a lot of these, South Dakota, and again, it's become partisan now, but there's still a very personal element in that state where, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, when people found out that you could run ads on the news for $10, they were coming in and just like total carpet bombing the state. I mean, Tom Daschle is another one who used to, every 6 years, he would get outspent. But Daschle would personally work the state, and it was effective. Now, the Democrats are not viable in South Dakota anymore, but I would not be surprised if Thune does a lot of that same personal campaigning. As Lindsey Graham does. There's a great example of this. And, yes. And he may end up in a runoff. But Lindsey Graham, unlike Tom Tillis and McCain maybe, some of these guys, Lindsey Graham could walk into any Republican event in South Carolina. And much as all these people don't like this and that he does, people will be running up to him, take selfies with him, and he'll get a round of applause, and he walks in the room. And then it'll be, "Hey, Sandy, I know you're angry at me about that vote, but I love you anyway." He's just a great politician, right? Some people are good politicians. And Boone, I suspect in his own way, is a very good politician in South Dakota and is able to work that. So, you know, will he get a primary opponent? That's, you know, I think he's up next cycle. But that's, you know, right now, you need 50 votes or 51 votes to get rid of the filibuster, and there's only 53 senators. So it's a tough situation. You know how these senators all want to feel their power.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Okay, I understand that. I do understand that. But I saw an ad for a candidate in Michigan. I'll think of his name in a second. John Thune's picture was there. This was a John Thune sponsored advertisement for this candidate. And it had John Thune's picture, and it said, emergency. We've just learned that illegal immigrants are voting in our elections. Please, you know, Mike Rogers, please vote for Mike Rogers so we can stop illegal aliens from voting in our elections. That was the ad.
Right.
That was the ad, Rick. Lie, a total misrepresentation, lying, pretending to get votes. I can't, that's yeah. what, and I think that, you know, when we ran those ads in South Dakota, he got hammered. So I think he could still be hammered, but that's an issue for another day. I mean, who knows? I want to play another ad that you did because it shows your discernment. And I'll just play it. This is clip 10. Let's listen.
I'm Heidi St. John, and I approve this ad.
Joe Kent claims he voted for Bernie Sanders to help Donald Trump, but that's a lie. Joe Kent was a Portland Democrat for nearly a decade and didn't even vote for Trump the first time Trump ran. Kent stuck with Bernie even after Sanders dropped out, and Kent continues to praise Bernie even to this day. That's the real Joe Kent, Portland Joe, the Bernie bro, a fake, a phony, and a fraud.
And that's not an overstatement. I actually interviewed Heidi St. John, and I interviewed Joe Kent a couple of times, actually. But then he went on to be appointed to be director of the National Counterterrorism Center.
Mm.
And then he left, as you know. He left and made a real big stink and undermined the president on Iran and on Israel.
A phony and a fraud.
Yes, you weren't overstating it. That's exactly what he was.
I saw that line from the great Bob Grant, by the way. Bob Grant, the radio talk show host. But most of what I have, I actually stole from somebody along the way, whether I remember it or not. I just watched so many ads, and it's like, oh, that's a good line. I'll use that someday.
Yeah, but the point is, it was true, and you chose it.
It was true.
It was true. It was a really hard-hitting ad, but it was true. So,
but it's not only true, it was believable, but it wasn't believable enough, unfortunately.
I know.
And right. And what makes, you know, he was endorsed by President Trump at the time. So it was, you know, hard to overcome that. We came close, but it's, you know, everything in politics has to be believable. And where the Democrats are very good is saying things that are believable, even if they're not true. And for years, it was like, they're going to cut your Social Security. They're going to throw Sears.
Grandma off the cliff.
Yeah.
Well, we know what show he had a great story. His wife was killed. She was an officer in, I forgot, it was an intelligence officer, I'm not sure. And she got killed, and they were both serving there. And he comes home, he has a child, I think. And he was in Special Forces. And so, you know, he was a very sympathetic character because of that, but he was actually very liberal. And I think, you know, my husband and I talk about this, Rick, sometimes people do confuse, because my husband's dad was in World War II, so was mine. My husband was a former FBI agent, a retired FBI agent, he is. So we're very, we love our country, and we understand. But what we, what I don't think we understood was some of these people are just fake. And especially there are people that are in the military that are not conservative. And people conflate those two. They think because they went in and wore the uniform.
Democrats are very good. That's why they come up with Abigail Spanberger and all the Mikey Sherrill and all these, Tammy Baldwin and, or, it was the one in Illinois, the senator in Duckworth, And they use that to try to make, see, one of the things Democrats are very good at doing, they find some way to make you think that the person's not a communist. There used to be, I'm in a Polish part of Chicago, I'm going to run a Polish candidate. And those people, you just, they were connected because it's like, oh, he's one of us. He can't be that bad, right? So she's military, she can't be that bad. It's something that makes you take your eye off what they really are. And the Democrats are very good for years at having their candidates kind of match their districts ethnically and other ways. Now it's really changed for them. But that was a lot of what this all is. It's just, she's a veteran, this and that. I personally find that military people and cops tend to be not as good in elective office because they're very good at taking orders, which is not who you want down there.
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
You don't want a bunch of Tom Massies, but you want some people who think for themselves. And a lot of these guys, they're like, the party needs you to do this. Like, oh, yes, sir. They just do what they're told.
That's true. Ours is not to reason why. Ours is just to do or die. That's the Army's motto. At least it used to be. But, I think of Mark Kelly. What a snake. Astronaut, military, and he is just despicable. And John McCain was, too. A lot of people don't know his record like I do because I was on the radio in Chicago, and a lot of veterans called in and told me personal things they knew about John. And he was no hero. And so,
but he was
I don't,
a senator with Obama, and they were colleagues. But see, Obama, he's a Chicago street guy, so those rules didn't really apply to him the same way as they applied to McCain.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, but two veterans who are really snakes. But I want to changing the subject. Do you have an opinion about what happened in Chip Roy's race for attorney general in Texas? Because Chip was beaten pretty badly, and Chip, I think, is the best man. So that's my opinion. What do you think happened there?
I think considering everything, how he was outspent and how the anti-Trump comments that he had made in the past were amplified very heavily, I think he actually did quite well. I don't know that with everything, with the president kind of riding high on the Republican side, I don't know that I would have picked 2026 to be the year to do a statewide run. But, he got 45%. I thought, and I was doing some supportive stuff for him. I think he's able to hold his head high coming out of that.
Yeah.
But, there's just another thing, his image. Middleton... Mays Middleton. First off, there's a lot of people who are listening to your broadcast who are big fans of Mays Middleton, and I know this just because he's a CNP member, Council of National Policy member. He's very connected to the conservatives across the country, and I have a mutual good friend of ours just sent out a couple of emails telling homeschoolers in Texas to support him. So
I didn't know that.
Like,
okay.
Yeah, and our friend Ray, So, it's a lot of it wasn't as much liberal. It was almost like people saw, hey, there's two good candidates here. I don't think Chip went negative enough. If I was doing the race, it would have been scorched earth on Mays Middleton, but that's how I just approach any kind of race like that. You have to tell people, here's the difference between the two candidates. And the difference isn't, I have better legal training. I went to this law school. That's how things used to be done. But now it has to be, here's an issue that I'm different from this other person on. And this issue is important to you. It's not just, he didn't pay his taxes on time or something stupid like that. Because that works in favor of people. There's a lot of voters who are like, good for him. I don't want to pay my taxes on time either. So I think it's a lot of this. People saw this as two good conservatives, and one's maybe a little stronger for Trump than the other, so I'll go with that person.
Yeah.
And I think that was really what happened, that race.
All right. So, Rick, last thing I want to ask you, because you poll and because you have your ear to the ground on things, I'd love to know what you think about the midterms. I mean, it's very confusing with the redistricting. I think this is what I think, me, non-political consultant person, thinks. I think that it's looking good for the Republicans on practical ways because of the redistricting and all of that. And, of course, Republicans have a better message, and Democrats are just crazy. Their candidates are crazy. But we see what's happening on the streets. We see all the wild stuff. We see the hatred of President Trump. And it's so the messaging is so strong from the left, in spite of themselves, that I'm just not sure. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, they have a very serious long-term problem because it's all built around hatred of Trump. And once Trump's out of the picture, which is going to be right after this year's election, whatever happens, because then it's just going to go into this, like the last 2 years, it just becomes a different type of thing. They have nothing. Like, they're just built around this anti-Trump hate. And when I remember polling New Jersey last year, and it was like, what do you like least about Jack Cittarelli? Like 53% of his unfavorable said he's pro-Trump, which he wasn't even pro-Trump. Right? He was just a Republican. Like, Trump had endorsed him after, like, him being anti-Trump for years. But he was pro-Trump. That was it. It's just this blind hatred of Trump. Well, once Trump's not on the scene the same way, and it's Marco Rubio or J.D. Vance or whoever it is, it's going to be much more difficult. I mean, you may not like – people can dislike Trump on a personal level for a variety of reasons. Much harder to dislike J.D. Vance or Marco Rubio on those grounds. And when you poll on – you know, you poll on Trump, well, you like about Trump, he's doing a great job, he stands up for America, whatever it is. Anything you dislike about him, yeah, I wish he'd stay off social media. I wish he'd watch his mouth. You know, I wish he wouldn't curse, whatever, right? People will say that. People who like him will say that. People who like Vance or like Rubio have very few negative things to say about them. Yeah. And that, conversely, the other side, they're just going to be stuck. So we have to get through this election. The main impediment as of today are high gas prices. But once these prices come down, hopefully they will by September, things are going to change rapidly because what do they have then?
Yeah, nothing, nobody to hate like that. You know, I used to say after Biden was elected, I could sort of a little refrain. He would do some, you know, he did horrid things right from the beginning, all those executive orders and rolled back a lot of things and men and women's sports and more things, abortion for all 9 months. I mean, all this stuff. And so I'd report on that. And then I'd always say, but at least there's no mean tweets. No mean tweets. Isn't that great? So, I mean, I just wanted people to understand the priorities here, that you have to see the big picture. Here you've got a guy who doesn't do mean tweets, but he does horrible things to this country. So, anyway,
you know what? You and I aren't running, so we have to take who's running.
No, that's true.
Right?
That's true. Unfortunately, yes.
And what's that saying I've heard many times? The only perfect person died on the cross 2,000 years ago, so you take what you get, right?
I believe that's actually true, Rick. Yeah, so,
right.
No, I know.
I mean,
and then when they start,
I
know when they...
You're not going to get perfection in your elected officials.
No,
you're going to have, they're going to have moral failings sometimes, and, you know, they're going to vote the wrong way, and, you know, you have to look at the overall picture, and you have to look, most importantly, exactly, at who runs for these horrible, low-paying jobs. And, you know, Congress... It's $174,000 for a lot of people who you want to have run for Congress. That is a significant pay cut, and it's a pay cut to the level where they can't afford to live on that kind of money. So then they don't do it. Then plus they have to put every stock they own and make it public. And people are just like, I don't need this. And then I'm going to go to a restaurant and worry somebody's going to spit my food or something. So we're creating a situation where people don't want to run for these jobs. And then you get to the local level where they pay $10,000 a year to be a county commissioner. Yeah, or a state rep in North Carolina gets like less than $14,000 a year. It's just insane. And that's the biggest problem is people don't want to run for these jobs anymore. So we have to be thankful for the people who do want to run and serve and hope that they do the best, you know, work that they can.
Well, I feel that way about President Trump because he sacrificed so much to run. He didn't need this.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't need to run the second time. the dangers to his family, the loss of his income, of his wealth, just all of that. It's just horrible.
You got to be good on your health.
Yeah, your health. Yeah, and time with your family. You're really sacrificing your life, and I respect him for that. Well, Rick Shafton from Neighborhood Research and Media, it's been fun to talk to you, and I have a feeling we're going to have another conversation as the midterms come. So if you're willing to join me again, it'd be great.
Absolutely. Well, it's going to be a busy like, couple of weeks with primaries. I mean, you've got a whole bunch tomorrow, and then on the 9th, Nevada, South Carolina. You have Iowa governor tomorrow, and then the 16th is the runoff in Alabama and Georgia. You have runoff in those two states that day, and so there's a lot of action going on this next couple of weeks, and a lot of that's going to determine where we go into the fall. But ultimately, in the fall, it's going to be the same message, whether you're who wins is that there's two sides. We need to make that difference as clear as possible. And the Democrats' job is to make the difference as little as possible and make it about personality. And, hey, I'm a veteran. I have six kids. Vote for me.
Yeah. I'm pro-life, or maybe.
Right, I'm pro-life.
No,
well,
I agree.
When Chris Christie, who proudly announced that when he first ran that he donated to Planned Parenthood and attacked my candidate for being pro-life, and then suddenly, when he announced that he was pro-life, I knew this word really didn't have any more meaning.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I know that because of how they vote in Washington. Right now, they're getting ready to reauthorize the payments to Planned Parenthood. You know, all those pro-lifers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't really mean
So,
all right. Well, Rick, it's just been great to talk to you. So let's do it again, okay?
Talk to you soon. Have a great one.
Yes, we'll do it again. All right, Rick, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Preborn makes it possible for us to have these conversations. And you all, so many of you have been faithful donors. Just amazing. You are amazing to me. I would say that, you know, Preborn advertises on almost all the major talk shows and podcasts. And our show performs as well as, from my understanding, most of those major podcasts. And you know why? It's because of you. It's because of you. There are fewer of you, but you give generously and you really believe in saving babies. And so thank you for that. I'm deeply grateful. I'm deeply grateful. And so for just $28, which is the cost of a dinner right now, in most places where most normal people eat, you can sponsor an ultrasound or introduce a mom to her baby for the very first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving those babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. I want to take a moment to tell you about an event that's coming up June 16th to the 19th. It's going to be in Lincolnshire, Illinois. Okay, why would I be mentioning this? Because it's Turning Point USA. It's Turning Point USA, and it's absolutely fabulous. Bruce and I'm pretty sure we're going to be there. We'd love to see. You know, for those of you that don't live in Illinois or in the Chicago area, Southwest has some really good flights to Chicago, wherever you are. Trust me, I've taken them many times. And they're not bad in terms of the cost either. So this Educator Summit is what it's called. Courage in Our Convictions, Cultivating Clarity in Chaos. You know, Turning Point continues to be doing some absolutely incredible things. And this is just one more of them. The head of their education department is Hutz Hertzberg. You've heard Hutz on this show. He's a very close friend of mine, and he's been with Turning Point, you know, for several years now. Hutz is just a godly man, smart as he can be, and he had a near-death experience, which I had him come and share with on the program a few years ago. And so Charlie Kirk hired Hutz, and Hutz, you know, was able to really bring some wisdom to all that Charlie was doing. So who are the speakers at this conference? Erica Kirk is coming, George Barna, Al Mohler, John Stone Street, Megan Basham. She's the one who wrote Shepherds for Sale. She was our guest to talk about that. Riley Gaines, Mary Miller. Mary is a congresswoman from Illinois. She's been with us too, but it's been a while. She's a beautiful, beautiful woman who is a farmer who has like six children. And she's just a firebrand in Congress, strong believer in Christ. Now, some of these people I don't know, but I'll mention a few names. Ben Shetler, Ryan Walters, David Goodwin, Heather Lloyd, maybe they're familiar names to you, Bill Federer, Erwin Lutzer. You've heard those names because Erwin Lutzer has been on this show many times, and so is Bill Federer. Bill is just a real wonderful, masterful history, expert in history. You've heard his commentaries. And John Woodbridge is going to be there, Bruce Lockerbie, Scott Phelps. Scott's a guy who's been fighting or promoting abstinence for many, many years. Tom Morrison, Natasha Harris. Let's see, I can't mention them all. I think I'll stop with that. But it's June 16th through the 19th in Lincolnshire, Illinois. And if you'd like to go, go to turningpointed.com. Turningpointed, as in education.com. Turningpointed.com. And check it out. You can reserve a space. It's again June 16th through the 19th in Lincolnshire, Illinois. Lincolnshire. That's on the north side of Chicago, by the way, in case you want to know. So again, turningpointed.com.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
We begin with breaking news at 3. Known election denier Tita Peters is being let out of prison early. Welcome into 9 News at 3. I'm Alexandra Lewis.
And I'm Sam Shocker. Democratic Governor Jared Polis just commuted Peters' sentence within the last 15 minutes. She's about 17 months into what was supposed to be a nearly 9-year sentence. 9 News political reporter Marshall Zellinger joins us now. Marshall, the governor has hinted for months that this could be coming.
And here it is, Sam. This afternoon, the governor made the decision to commute Peters' sentence, shrinking it from nearly 9 years to 4.5, and says she'll be out on parole June 1st. He did not pardon Peters, so her conviction stands. She'll still be a felon for her role in a security breach of election equipment in a failed attempt to prove voter fraud in the 2020 election. A commutation reduces her sentence. Last month, the State Court of Appeals threw out her 9-year sentence and ordered her to be resentenced in Mesa County. The appeals court believed the judge took into account her free speech when sentencing her. Polis agreed with that and commuted her sentence before that judge could issue a new one.
Be clear, she deserved to go to jail. She committed a crime. What's at issue here is how long the sentence is. And I agree with the appeals court that in the sentencing hearing, the judge incorrectly looked at and considered her bizarre viewpoints, her speech, and held her speech against her.
Okay, so the reason I'm playing that is because something incredible is happening today. This is, as I'm recording this, it's June the 1st, and today Tina Peters will be released from prison. She could be out now as I'm talking to you. I don't know. And you've been listening to me for a long time. Tina Peters was the Mesa County clerk. You've heard her on this program more than once because I just think the world of her. She was such a courageous woman, a gold star mom. And then during the 2020 election, she noticed some really bad things happening in Mesa County. She was the Mesa County elections clerk, elected by the people. And so it was Dominion Voter Systems, and of course you heard that report. She's a known election denier. She has bizarre viewpoints. I mean, you should have, I wish we'd had time to tell you all of the horrible ways she's been treated. And since she's been in prison, she's been beaten, had death threats. It's just been horrible. And so President Trump really came down hard on Jared Polis, the Colorado governor, but the Colorado officials would not let Tina out. They just would not. They wouldn't budge because Tina really holds the keys to exposing their, this is me saying this, their malfeasance in the 2020 election. She actually had the proof that the Dominion voting systems were being controlled from without. And so that's why she had to go to prison. They had to shut her up. They had to destroy her. But they didn't destroy her. She taught Bible study in the prison. She just shone like the star that she is. She's a wonderful person, and I'm sure she'll be joining us soon at this microphone. But I want to tell you one other thing that just came out as I was talking, recording this podcast. Here it is, my friend Mike Davis of Article 3 Project. So this is what he's done. Attorney Mike Davis has just written a criminal referral to the DOG and Harmeet Dhillon to launch investigations into the mistreatment of Tina Peters in Colorado prison now that she's released. The list includes Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, who, by the way, I'll just read another article. Jenna said when she found out they were going to let her out, she said, "It's a dark day for democracy." And that Jared Polis, the governor, was selling out our state's justice system for Trump. Well, yeah, so they wouldn't budge on letting her out. And so what President Trump did, whether they're connected or not, I don't know. But Trump then decided to move and dismantle the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Colorado and relocate it at U.S. Space Command in Alabama. So there was a little bit of, you know, a little bit of carrot and stick thing going on. And Jared Polis, now this is what I assume from what I'm reading. I didn't read an article that said this, but I believe that's what happened. So Mike Davis now is doing this referral to the Justice Department. And this is what it says. Only a criminal investigation can answer these questions because judges and prosecutors are absolutely immune civilly. This protection, however, does not extend to criminal liability. I write to urge an investigation of potential federal civil rights violations of Tina Peters. The evidence is clear. Colorado government officials conspired to severely, unconstitutionally, and criminally punish Tina Peters because of her First Amendment protected views on election integrity. Specifically, A3P, that's Article 3 Project, requests that the criminal investigation focus on the following participants. Mesa County District Judge Matthew Barrett. I think I played clips for you some time back about how surly and mean, just reprehensible, he treated Tina, who was a lady. At the very least, if she thinks she's guilty, she's a 70-year-old woman, very gracious, a strong believer who just wouldn't budge on her faith or belief that what she saw was amounted to voter fraud. But they hated her for it. So they're saying that the Mesa County District Judge Matthew Barrett is going to be investigated. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser, Mesa County District Attorney Dan Rubenstein, who led the prosecution in cooperation with Weiser, Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, and any and all other potential conspirators. Now, that I may have misstated. I want to make sure that you know that he is asking for criminal referrals. They haven't been granted yet, so because it's all happening so quickly here. I can't tell you how grateful I am. I know that many of you have been praying for Tina. I've certainly been praying for Tina. And I just feel like God has answered prayer. I just can't wait to talk to her and see her if possible. And I wanted you to know about this because if you've been, you know, following this with me, this is a great day. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, President Trump. Thank you for something. And Mike Davis. Thank you, Mike Davis. Well, we couldn't bring you these stories, these important alerts, if it weren't for Preborn. They are our sponsor. And if you'd like to help, you know, the show to continue, you can go to preborn.com/Sandy. And most of all, if you want to help save babies, that's the number one thing. And this is just a byproduct that the show gets to be funded a little bit by their support of us. It's preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, this is a great day. And I want to thank you for listening to this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.